the Jewish Game of Thrones, part 3. So we're up to the beginning of the book of Kings, Kings 1, chapter 1, verse 1, right? Act 1, scene 1. And it begins, the king David was very old in his days, and they covered him with garments, and it wasn't warm for him. Chazal tell us that what happened was, a long time ago, when David HaMelech was first becoming king, and he was sort of competing with his father-in-law, Shaul HaMelech, so Shaul HaMelech was convinced that David HaMelech was out to get him, to try to kill him. So there was one scene over there in the book of Samuel, where Shaul ends up going to the bathroom inside a cave, and David HaMelech is so close to him, he could have killed him if he really wanted to. But instead of killing him, he wanted to send a message to Shaul that he's not really trying to kill him. So what did he do? He cut off a piece of Shaul HaMelech's garment when Shaul HaMelech was going to the bathroom. Right? And he cut it off. And that showed Shaul that David HaMelech is not... That should have theoretically showed him that David HaMelech is not trying to kill him. Because if he wanted to kill him, he could have killed him. But he's just trying... You know, he's just... You know, Shmuel appointed him as the king and he's supposed to take over.
Like David was here.
Right, something like that.
I love you.
So Chazal tell us that this was David HaMelech's intention, but in a certain way he was disparaging or disgracing the concept of clothing, because he didn't have hakaras hatov, he didn't have the recognition or gratitude to the concept of clothing, which keeps a person warm in the winter. And instead he cut off a piece of Shaul HaMelech's clothing. So David HaMelech had a sort of punishment that in his older years, his clothing wouldn't be able to keep him warm anymore. So he put on his clothing and it didn't keep him warm.
You want to say one thing?
No. David HaMelech's servants said, so he has this problem over here, he's very old and he can't keep warm. So his servants said to him, "We're going to go search out a young virgin girl and she'll stand in front of the king as an attendant, and she'll like lie with him, and she'll be able to keep him warm." Right? So the Navi says they went out and they searched for such a young lady, a beautiful lady. Don't know why it had to be beautiful. The Mefarshim, I think one of the Mefarshim says, because what are we trying to do over here? We're trying to keep him warm, right? So you can buy, a space heater that keeps you warm. But if you're the king, you buy the fanciest space heater, right? So that's why we're looking not just for a girl that's going to keep him warm, but a beautiful girl, because this is the king. So the king has to get like the fanciest warmer, right? So they sought out the most beautiful girl within all of the Jews, all the territory of the Jewish people, and they found this woman named Avishag Hashunamis. Avishag the Shunammite, and they brought her in front of the king, and it says that she was very beautiful, and she was the king. She became the king's attendant, and she served the king. Va'amelech lo yada, and the king didn't know her, meaning in the biblical sense, he wasn't intimate with her at all. You can ask why wasn't he? Like what would have been the issue? So, some people want to say, just like a more simplistic understanding, is because the whole point was that apparently the warmth from a young virgin woman gives him more warmth, right? But then if he would be intimate with her, then she wouldn't be in that state anymore, and then she wouldn't be giving off the same degree of warmth as what they were looking for. So it would have defeated the whole purpose. The second understanding would be because David HaMelech is a 70-year-old man, so he doesn't necessarily have physical ability to engage in these type of things anymore.
That's not true, because the story, right?
The Gemara says that that's what Avishag claimed to him. She argued to him that, the reason why you're not being intimate with me is because you're too old and you don't have the stamina anymore to be able to engage in that type of thing, right? But David HaMelech said, no, the reason is because what Natan said, because of the fact that he's already maxed out on how many wives. He has 18 wives. Allah as a king can't have more than 18 wives, so he couldn't take her. We'll see later on in the story how David HaMelech sort of tries to prove that to her, and she becomes a character later on in the continuation of the story. Okay, so now, again, we're holding by David HaMelech being an old man. We're towards the end of his reign. If you don't know, David HaMelech was the king for 40 years, and he is going to end up dying when he's at the age of 70. So he became king at 30, and he's going to die at the age of 70. So the question is, who's going to succeed David HaMelech? So we've already discussed the different sons of David HaMelech. The first son, Amnon, he's already out of the picture. He raped his sister, or whatever, half-sister, Tamar, or maybe not even half-sister. And then he was killed by Tamar's brother, Avshalom, who's number three. Avshalom himself started a rebellion, claimed to become the king, and he himself was killed by David HaMelech's general, Yoav ben Tzruiah. Who we'll see today, he gets his punishment for that. So who's left? So the fourth son, his name is Adonio ben Chagis.
But
Kilov. Well, so we said in the first year that for some reason Kilov wasn't in the running.
What did you say? Adonio ben Chagis?
Adonio ben Chagis. He's the son, Adoniahu, the son of David HaMelech. His mother's name was Chagis.
Oh.
Right? So he decided, I'm next in line to the throne. I'm going to be the king. It says that he made for himself, he had riders and a chariot, and he had 50 men running in front of him to give him like honor. And the Pasuk, interestingly, parenthetically actually, says like, why did Adoniel think he could get away with this? So it says, because David HaMelech, his father, didn't properly rear him. David HaMelech never like gave Musar to his son Adoniyahu. He never reprimanded him or rebuked him for doing anything wrong. He just let him do what he did, right? And because of that, Adoniyahu was raised. It's like they have an expression: "Spare the rod, spoil the child." Right? If you don't hit them, you don't try to rear them and teach children proper chinuch when they're growing up. So then they're going to end up spoiled. So that's exactly what the pasuk tells us happened to Adoniyahu. That he ended up growing up spoiled, and he thought that he's going to be able to do whatever he felt like. So he decided he's going to become the next king, and he had on his side Yoav ben Tzruiah, David HaMelech's general, joined up with Adoniyahu, and as well as Evyasar, who was the Kohen Gadol, he also joined up with Adoniyahu.
Why? Why did he join?
I'm not sure. On the other hand, the pasuk tells us that a different Kohen did not join with Adoniyahu. His name was Tzadok the Kohen. And another person who was also a general, but not the head general, his name was Benayahu ben Yahiyada, who was a great warrior in the army of David HaMelech. He wasn't the head of the army. So he also didn't join Adoniyahu. And as Nason the Navi, the prophet Nason, we've encountered before, he also didn't join Adoniyahu. So what does Adoniyahu do? He goes and he offers sacrifices, and he makes a big party with all the sons of the king, all his brothers, except that he doesn't invite two significant people to this major party. He doesn't invite his youngest brother, who's a boy named Shlomo, and he doesn't invite the prophet Nason to this big party that he arranged as sort of his coronation.
So he thinks he's going to be king.
Well, so he thinks he's going to be king, and he purposely doesn't invite these two people. Now the question is, why doesn't he invite these two people?
What makes someone the king?
It's a good question. Let's say the Sanhedrin makes someone the king. Let's say, I don't know.
So basically, was he going to get that? Or it's like a guy saying, I'm going to be the president, but must not vote.
Let's say
Trump did that.
Oh, he rigged the election, yeah.
But Al Gore was to that, right?
Putin,
he almost did that. No, but if you're the de facto king, so then you're the king, right? If you act like the king, and you smell like the king, you look like the king, you walk around with a crown, and you have all these people in front of you, and they all call you the king, so that makes you the king.
No, that kind of guy can't make himself the king. The king has certain things, okay. So anoint him from the last guy.
So we'll see what happens. Okay, so why didn't Adoniyahu invite to his big party Shlomo and Nason? Right, so that suggests that he was already aware of something that's going against him. Something that he had a reason why he didn't invite the prophet Nason and his youngest brother Shlomo. So the Radak doesn't say anything anywhere in the Pesukim, but the Radak tells us that Nason HaNavi had previously prophesied that Shlomo is supposed to be the king. So therefore, Adoniyahu felt threatened by both Nason and Shlomo, and he didn't invite them to his big party. That's what the Radak says, and we'll see further on that it wasn't just a prophecy. There's more of a reason why Shlomo should be the king. But we'll get to that. Okay.
You said Shlomo was related? No.
What? Shlomo?
He was his youngest brother.
He's Adoniyahu's youngest brother.
From
the same father. They're both sons of David and Melech with different mothers.
He's the eldest son. He's the oldest son.
These are the four oldest sons on the chart over here.
The oldest sons would be the king.
Right? Shlomo Melech is not even on the chart. He's not even.
What? What do you mean? Shlomo was next?
No, he wasn't even next. He was the youngest. Shlomo's mother, Bathsheba, was David Melech's 18th wife. These are David Melech's the first sons of David Melech's first wives. So Shlomo Melech is like, you know, you wouldn't even think he's in the running, b'chol, except for the fact that Nathan Hanavi, according to Radak, had previously prophesied that Shlomo is supposed to be king. Now, we're also assuming that Adoniyahu was aware of this prophecy, which, you know, why would he be aware of it, and let's say nobody else is aware of it, because all the masses seem to be following Adoniyahu. But Adoniyahu seemed to have been aware of this prophecy, and therefore he decided not to invite Shlomo and Nathan to his coronation. So Nathan decides that, you know, he wants to see to the fulfillment of his prophecy. So what's he going to do? He goes to Shlomo Melech's mother, Bathsheba, David Melech's 18th wife, and he says to her that, have you heard that Adoniyahu became the king? And David Melech doesn't even know about it. So what are we going to do? So he says to her that this is what we're going to do. I'll give you advice and how I'm going to save you and save Shlomo and make it that we'll save this prophecy and make it come to fruition. He says to her, you should go to the king and tell the and remind the king that he had previously sworn to you that your son Shlomo is going to be the king after him. And you should ask him, you know, why is it that this guy Adoniyahu is the king? And while you're speaking to the king, I'm going to come after you and I'm going to sort of complement or supplement your words, and together you and I will be able to convince David HaMelech that really Shlomo is supposed to be the king. So it seems that David HaMelech doesn't even know that Adoniyahu has sort of appointed himself as the king and is in the way acting like the king.
He didn't invite David
HaMelech. Right. So the pasuk says like this. And this is a very interesting worded pasuk, and Chazal have an interesting drash on it. It says, "Vatovei Bathsheba el Hamelach Hachadra." Bathsheba came to the king to the room. Vamelach Zaken Ma'od, and the king is very old. Why does he have to say that he's very old? Vavishag Hashunamis Misharas Es Hamelach, and Avishag the Shunamis was attending to the king. Why does he have to say who was attending to the king? Right. And then Bathsheba is going to give a whole speech about the fact that David HaMelech had previously sworn to him, to her, who was supposed to be the king after.
Yeah, right?
Second. So Chazal tells a very interesting thing on this pasuk where it says that Bathsheba came to the king, into the room, and the king was very old, and Avishag Shunamis was there. So Chazal tells us, it's Gemara in Sanhedrin, it says that when Bathsheba came to the king, so the Gemara cryptically says that she wiped herself with 13 cloths. That's what the Gemara says. So Rashi explains that what it means is that David HaMelech had relations with her 13 times in order to disprove the notion that the reason why he wasn't intimate with Avishag Ushunamis was because he was too old, and rather to say the reason is because he had already too many wives. And look, his real wife came in and he was still had the vigor of a young man. That's what Rashi explains the Gemara is trying to say. Okay, whatever, that's sort of a side point. So Bathsheba comes in and she speaks to David HaMelech and she says to him, you know, you swore to me in the name of Hashem that Shlomo is supposed to be the king after you, right? And now look, Adoniyahu, your other son, a different son of yours, Adoniyahu, he became the king, and you, David HaMelech, you don't even know about it. It's like, what are you going to do about it? What's going to happen? And she says to him that he slaughtered sacrifices, and he has with him Yoav, the head of the army, and Avyasar, and Gadol, and they're all on his side, and he made this big party with all these people, and he didn't even call Shlomo HaMelech to the party. So this is what she says to David HaMelech. This is what Bathsheba says to David HaMelech. So one question is, I mean, the main question over here is that if you look in all of in all of the verses over here in Sefer Malachim and Sefer Shmuel, you never find anywhere that David HaMelech actually promised or swore to Bathsheba that her son is going to be the king after her. Where do you see that David HaMelech swore that Shlomo HaMelech was going to be the king? Bathsheba is coming to him with an argument that you swore that he's going to be the king. Where do we see that he swore that? So again, the Radak fills in the details over here. The Radak says, if you remember back last week, we spoke about the story of David HaMelech originally marrying Bathsheba. So originally, before he actually married her, so first she became pregnant with him, and they had a baby, and the baby lived for 7 days and got sick, as the prophet said, it's going to die, and then it died, right? And then the pasuk says that David HaMelech consoled himself with her, and she became pregnant, had another child, and that was Shlomo HaMelech. So Radak says that in between these two events, after the death of the first child and her conceiving the second child, so Bathsheba decided that she doesn't want to be with David HaMelech anymore. Because she said, look, the first child died because of our the sin of our union. So what do I gain by continuing to be with you? You know, the second child is also going to be rejected. Why should I continue to stay with you? So the Radak says that at that point, David HaMelech swore to her that if you stay with me and we have another child, that child will be the king. So this is the promise or the oath that Bathsheba is referring to. The oath that David HaMelech took when he originally married her in order to stay with her after the first child that they had died, before Shlomo HaMelech was born. So David HaMelech swore that the next child they have is going to be the king. That's what Bathsheba was referring to.
What's he basing it on?
What's the Radak basing it on?
Sorry,
I don't know. But if you say what the Radak is saying, it fits in a lot, and a lot of it makes more sense now. So this is what Bathsheba says to David HaMelech. And as she's talking, it says, so David HaMelech gets an announcement, the prophet Nathan has come here to see you. Right, that's part of the plan. So David HaMelech says, okay, let the prophet in. He comes in, and he bows down to the king, and he says to the king, is it true that you said that Adon Yahu should be king after you? And he came and he offered sacrifices, and he has all these people with him, Yoav, the head of the army, and Avyasar, the Kohen, all these people eating and drinking with him, and they're all saying, Yechi HaMelech Adon Yahu, is this sanctioned by you? And if so, how come this guy Adonio, who's the new king, how come he never called me, your servant, meaning Nason, he never called me, and Sadok, who was a different Kohen, and Benayo, Ben Yoyada, who was one of the great warriors, and Shlomo, your youngest son, he didn't call to the party. Why didn't he invite us? If you're the one who's sanctioning his coronation and everything, so what's happening over here? So the king says, you know, basically he's being confronted both by Bathsheba and by Nathan HaNavi that he had already promised before that Shlomo HaMelech is supposed to be the king, and he's not. And it seems that Adonio is being the king, and he's just forgetting about who the other people he was responsible to Nathan, to all these, to Tzadok the Kohen, to Ben Yoyada, the great warrior, right? And he's just forgetting about them. So David HaMelech answers, and he says, Chai Hashem, Shapado Snafshi, be called Tzora, I swear in the name of Hashem, who saves me from all my distresses, that in accordance with the way I had sworn before, that I had previously sworn that Shlomo is going to be the king afterwards, Ken Esa Hayem Ezeh, that's how it's going to be today, and I swear that really Shlomo HaMelech is going to be the king, and that's how it's going to be. And it says, Bathsheba left, she bowed in front of the king and she left, and she said, Yichya Adoni HaMelech David La'olam. And then, of course, David HaMelech calls for this guy, Tzadok HaKoyen, and Nathan HaNavi, and Benayahu Ben Yoyada. He gathers all of them in front of them, and he tells them that you should take my chariot, you should take my son Shlomo, and put him on my mule, and ride him on my mule, and you should bring him to the Gihon River. The custom used to be that when you coronate a king, so you coronate him by the river, because the river represents the flow of time and the continuation of a reign of a king. That's one of the reasons that they say, that's one of the reasons why on Rosh Hashanah, which is the holiday where we recognize the kingship of Hashem, so we go out and we do tashlich by a river. the ceremony of some people throw different food, whatever, into the river, and they say certain tefillahs as in a recognition of Hashem's kingship. You do it specifically by a river because the river symbolizes the continuation of and the everlasting, the everlasting reign of a king, or the hope for the everlasting reign of a king. And so they anoint Sadok HaKayin and Nasan HaNavi anoint Shlaimai as the king of Klal Yisrael, and they blow the shofar and they say Yechi HaMelech Shlaimai, and they went and they brought him all around to everybody, and they rode him on the king's mule, and they took him and they blew the shofar, and everyone was saying Yechi HaMelech Shlaimai, and everyone was coming after him, and they made a whole parade. As all the people were following after Shlomo, and they were blowing flute, or they were playing flutes, and everyone came. Everyone was very happy, and there was a lot of noise. And then the other side, Adoniyahu and his entourage, they heard this great noise, and they're saying, "Well, what's this great noise that we hear over here?" So they told them. So Yonasan, who is the son of Avyasar the Kohen Gadol. So you would assume that this Yonasan guy is like next in line to be the Kohen Gadol. So he tells them that, oh, they've actually changed the plan, and David HaMelech himself intervened and decided that Shlomo is supposed to be the king, not you. So instead they decided that Shlomo is going to be the king, and basically, you know, that was the consensus, and basically Shlomo HaMelech became enthroned as not necessarily the king yet, because David HaMelech was still alive at this point, but he was going to be assumed to be the next king. So what happens with Adoniyahu, right? Adoniyah, the brother of Shlomo HaMelech, I don't know if it's a rebellion, but he tried to place himself as the next king. So it says that he heard about this, that Shlomo HaMelech became officially designated as the next king, and he was very scared of his brother Shlomo. So he went and he held onto the corners of the Mizbeach. So he fled into, let's say, where the Mishkan was in Givon. That's where the Mishkan was at this point, in a place called Givon, and he held onto the corners of the Mizbeach. And he said, you know, like, I'm not coming out unless the king Shlomo will swear to me that he's not going to kill me. Right? So Shlomo HaMelech basically swore to him in a sort of intelligent way. He didn't say, I'm not going to kill you. Shlomo HaMelech said to him, if you're loyal, then lo yipol misarase arsa. Not even one of your hairs is going to fall to the ground. I'm not going to touch a hair from your head. That's where the expression comes from. He won't even touch a hair from his head. But if you do bad, then I'll kill you. So Adonio was assuaged by that guarantee from Shlomo HaMelech, and he came down from the Mizbeach, and he bowed in front of Shlomo HaMelech, and Shlomo HaMelech told him, okay, go home. Okay, so this is more or less how Shlomo HaMelech was placed as the next in line to the throne. The pasuk says, okay, so now we're up to David HaMelech. David HaMelech is getting old, and it says, Vayikrivu Yemei David Lamus, and the days of David to die were coming near, and he gave his last will and testimony to Shlomo HaMelech. He gave him his tzava, what he was commanding Shlomo HaMelech to do as king, what he expected of Shlomo HaMelech. One of the things he wanted Shlomo HaMelech to do was to take care of Yoav. Because Yoav ben Tzruya, the head of the army, so he's a very interesting character throughout the book of Samuel and Kings as well. He was, you know, he was David HaMelech's loyal general, but on the other hand, you find that he killed too many people that he shouldn't have killed, or not so clear if he should have killed. So you know, he's in a way he's a good guy. Chazal tell us that Yoav ben Tzruya was the head of the Sanhedrin in his time, so he was a big Talmud Chacham, But in a way, you know, David HaMelech said that, like, you know, he should get punished for the misdeeds that he did. Like, yesterday we saw that Yoav ben Tsruya went against David HaMelech's command, disobeyed the command about Avshalom, and he killed Avshalom. So David HaMelech told, one of the things he told Shlomo HaMelech on his deathbed was to take care of this Yoav ben Tsruya. He told him how to take care of other people as well. I don't want to get into all the details. And then it says that it just sort of sums up David HaMelech's reign. It says he was king for 40 years, and 7 years in Hebron, and 33 years in Yerushalayim. And he died. He was 70 years old when he died. His reign was 40 years. There's some interesting stories regarding the death of David HaMelech. There's interesting points regarding the death of David HaMelech. There's an interesting Gemara in Masechet Shabbos on Daf Lamed Amud Beis, 30b. The Gemara says that it was told to David HaMelech that he's going to die on Shabbos. He's going to die. What day of the week is he going to die? He's going to die Shabbos. So David HaMelech knew that, well, if I'm going to die on Shabbos, so I can sort of get around, I could cheat death by ensuring that I study Torah the entire Shabbos, and if I'm studying Torah, the Malach HaMavis won't be able to attack me while I'm studying Torah, and then I'll be able to cheat death, and I'll live longer than I was supposed to live. But the story goes that, you know, the Malach HaMavis has his way of, you know, when it's a person's time, it's a person's time, and there's no way to get around it. So what the Malach HaMavis did was, David HaMelech was sitting there in his palace learning Torah on Shabbos, and when it came to the Shabbos that he was supposed to die, so the Malach HaMavis did something in David HaMelech's, in his orchard outside, and made some sort of noise over there, some big noise. So David HaMelech went outside to go see what it was. And as he goes outside, he's walking down the stairs, and the stairs breaks, and he falls down. And at that moment, for that split moment, he wasn't learning Torah, wasn't thinking about Torah, and then he lost it, and then Malach HaMavis was able to grab him, and that's how he died. That's what the Gemara says. So the Gemara is basically telling us that David HaMelech died on Shabbos. The Rishonim tell us, this is a very interesting idea, it's not so well known, the Rishonim tell us that David HaMelech died on Shabbos afternoon. And one of the things we say by Mincha on Shabbos afternoon, so we say after Shemoneh Esrei, so we say this paragraph called Tzidkascha, which has 3 different psukim that start with the word Tzidkascha, and basically those psukim were declaring the Tziduk HaDin, the justice of God, where we're accepting on ourselves that, you know, whatever God does in the world is just, and we say 3 psukim, 3 verses from Tehillim that all start with the word Tzidkascha. So the Rishonim tell us that these three verses correspond to 3 people who died on Shabbos afternoon. That's why we say it on Shabbos afternoon. And those 3 people are David HaMelech, Yosef HaTzadik, and Moshe Rabbeinu. They all died on Shabbos afternoon. So that's why we say Tzidkascha on Shabbos afternoon. So Chazal tells us he died Shabbos. The Rishonim say that he died Shabbos afternoon. And there's another tradition that tells us that this wasn't a regular Shabbos that David HaMelech died on, but it was a Shabbos that was also Shavuos, the holiday of Shavuos. David HaMelech died on the holiday of Shavuos, and maybe he was even born on the holiday of Shavuos. And that's also brought down as one of the reasons why we read the scroll of Ruth on the holiday of Shavuos, because the scroll of Ruth has a whole story about Ruth marrying Boaz, and from that union came Oved, and Oved was the father of Yishai, and Yishai was the father of David. And as the Megillah itself concludes, David HaMelech was a descendant of Ruth. So because David HaMelech died on Shavuos, so we read the scroll concerning his birth and his genealogy specifically on the holiday of Shavuos. Those are some interesting points about the death of David HaMelech. Fine. So it says after David HaMelech died, it says Shlomo Yashav Akisei David Aviv. Shlomo sat on the chair of his father David, Vatikon Malchusei Moed, and his kingship was very much established. And now we're going to come back to Adoniyahu. So what does Adoniyahu do? Adoniyahu has a very interesting proposal. Adoniyahu, the pasuk tells us, he goes to Bathsheba, the mother of Shlomo Melech, and he says to her. You know, I have something I want to tell you. And she says, okay, what do you want to say? He says, I know, you know that, you know, really I was supposed to be the king, sort of, and it was sort of taken away from me, and it was given to my brother Shlomo. Okay, fine. Hashem decided that that's the way it's supposed to be. But I have one question from you that, and please, you know, don't leave me empty-handed. Please let me give me this one grant. So she says that, okay, speak. What's your question? So he says that, please tell my brother Shlomo that he shouldn't leave me empty-handed. He should give me Avishag HaShunamis as a wife. I want to marry Avishag HaShunamis, right? This lady we got in the beginning of the shir, the beautiful lady that was supposed to warm up David HaMelech, right? See, he wants to marry her. That's what Adonai Yehu wants. He wants to marry her. So Bathsheba, Shlomo Melech's mother, says, okay, fine, I'll go speak to the king. So it says that she goes to Shlomo Melech, and she sits down. It's an interesting thing. The pasuk says that she had a throne right next to the throne of Shlomo Melech. It's like the king's mother had a special throne as well. And she sat on the right side of the king. And she said to him, I have a question I want to ask you. And he says, okay, what's the question? And she says, that, you know, could we marry off Avishag HaShunamis to your brother Adonai Yehu? And then Shlomo, it doesn't say that he got angry, but you could expect that he got pretty angry. And he says, well, why don't you just give him the whole kingship? Right? He's asking for Avishag HaShunamis, just give him the whole kingship. Right?
What did Shlomo have from Avishag HaShunamis?
Well, so one second, Shlomo says, no, we can't do that. And Shlomo Melech took this actually as an act of rebellion, that Adonai Yehu requested that he wanted to marry Avishag HaShunamis. Shlomo Melech took that as an act of rebellion, and he sent off Ben-Yohu Ben-Yehoyada to go kill Adonai Yehu, and Ben-Yehu Ben-Yehoyada kills Adonai Yehu, and now we have crossed out the name Adonai Yehu from our chart.
Why
was this looked at as an act of rebellion? Why was Adonai Yehu's request to marry Avishag HaShunamis, why was that looked at as an act of rebellion? What do you guys say?
Was it something he got from David HaMelech? Like, that's part of
it. So we mentioned yesterday that there's an idea when we were talking about Avshalom consorting with David HaMelech's concubines, that there's an idea that something which belongs to the king, you can't use it for yourself unless you're also a king, because it's disgraceful to the kingship that you're going to use something that belongs to the king. Oh, this is the king's pen. I'm going to use the king's pen. You can't use the king's pen unless you're the king. Right? So by requesting to marry Avishag HaShunamis, which, you know, in halachic ways is permitted because she wasn't married to David HaMelech, she was just there to keep him warm, right? So halachically, in terms of the marriage, it would have been permitted, but he's requesting to use something which belongs to the king. Shlomo HaMelech looked at that as an act of rebellion. He says, you want to marry Avishag HaShunamis? You're rebelling against me. And he sent Ben-Yohu Ben-Yehoyada to go out and kill Adonai Yehu for this act of rebellion.
That's
what he's saying. Yes, that's called you're trying to rebel. Okay, just an interesting point over here. Under Shlomo Melech's reign, so when he became king, he made some changes. You know, like Lahavda, like when a new president comes in, so like he appoints like a new, I don't know, secretary of state and a new secretary of defense. So like he makes some changes in the cabinet. So Shlomo Melech, when he came in, he also made some changes to the cabinet. Previously, the Kohen Gadol under his father David Melech had been a Vyasar Kohen. Now Shlomo Melech changes it and he makes Tzadik HaKohen. He's going to be the new Kohen Gadol. Avyasar Kohen, we mentioned before, was on the side of Adonai Yehu, so he sort of got rid of that guy and put a loyalist in, Tzadik, who is loyal to himself. In the same way, Yoav ben Tzruya was previously the head of the army under David HaMelech, and even though Yoav ben Tzruya was on David HaMelech's side against Avshalom, but he did join in the rebellion of Adonai Yehu, so Shlomo HaMelech looked at Yoav as somewhat of a threat to himself. So he got somebody else to be in charge of the army. He got this Ben-Yohu Ben-Yehoyada, who was a great warrior. He got him in charge of the army instead. So he's the new guy in charge. So like we said, that you know, when Shlomo Melech wanted Adonai Yehu killed, so he told Ben-Yohu Ben-Yehoyada to take care of it. Special ops, right? So I just wanted to say a few ideas, a few things about Ben Yahu, Ben Yahiyada. First of all, the Zohar says that the name Ben Yahu is related to the word Bina. Bina is a type of wisdom, right? Chokhmah, Bina, and Das, understanding, wisdom. Okay, however you want to translate it, but it's a certain type of intellectual understanding. So the Zohar is saying that Ben Yahu wasn't just a great warrior, but he was also a good strategist. He was a big Talmud Chacham. The Gemara says as well that he was the head of the Sanhedrin. So it seemed to be that after Yoav, we'll see what happens with Yoav, but after we got rid of Yoav, so now Ben Yahu Ben Yahiyada is going to be the new head of the Sanhedrin. There's a pasuk, a very cryptic pasuk about Ben Yahu Ben Yahiyada in the Sefer Shmuel that says that he's Ben Yahu Ben Yahiyada who beat up a lion on a snowy day. So what does it mean that he beat up a lion on a snowy day? So the Gemara says two explanations. The Gemara says either it means that he took blocks of ice and he like smashed them up and made it into like a mikvah and he went inside the ice to go to the mikvah. That's one explanation. The other explanation is that he learned Taras Koyanim on a winter day. He learned the entire Taras Koyanim on a winter day. Now, I'm not sure what this means exactly, but I'll tell you this much. Taras Koyanim is, there's two meanings of the word, of the term Taras Koyanim. It can either refer to what we have in the Chumash of Sefer Vayikra, or Taras Koyanim refers to a special, a book from Chazal of halachic medrash on Sefer Vayikra that's called Taras Koyanim. Right? So Taras Koyanim could either mean Sefer Vayikra itself, Leviticus, or it can mean a special book from Chazal that's a halachic medrash that was written on Leviticus, a commentary on Leviticus. Now, I'm not sure what it means in this context, but it's an interesting thing. Once we're mentioning it, that Taras Koyanim is actually the Hebrew word for Leviticus. I mean, the English names of the books of the Bible are really come from what Chazal call those names. The book that we call Sefer Vayikra, so in the Gemara and in Chazal, they don't call it Sefer Vayikra. They call it Sefer Taras Koyanim, right? The laws of the Koyanim, and that's what more or less Leviticus means. There's other terms also, Numbers, right? Why is it called Numbers? We call it Sefer Bamidbar. Why is it called Numbers? Bamidbar means in the desert. So why is it called Numbers? Because Chazal called that book Numbers. They called it Chumash HaPikudim. Right? So therefore the English name is Numbers. Exodus. Why is it called Exodus? So Exodus is the name that Chazal gave the Sefer is Chumash HaGeula, or Sefer HaGeula. Geula means to exit, to come out. So it's called Exodus. Right? The same thing, Deuteronomy, Mishneh Torah, that's what Chazal called Sefer Dvar, and they call it Mishneh Torah, so that's why in English we call it Deuteronomy, which is a repetition. And there's another one also, Lamentations. Right? We call it Megillas Eicha. Eicha means how. So why is it called Lamentations? Because Chazal called it Megillas Kinois. Gemara consistently refers to Eicha as Megillas Kinois, the scroll of lamentations. A kina is a lamentation, so therefore in English they call it Lamentations.
Who gave the name Bereshit Shmos Vayikra?
What?
Who gave that name?
Those are just the first uncommon words of each of the Sefer Svarim.
Oh, so there's no one.
Chazal didn't call it. Okay, Bereshit, I think everyone calls it Bereshit. But the Shmos, Chazal didn't call it Shmos. They called it Sefer HaGeula. What?
Genesis, whatever.
What? Genesis means, what does Genesis mean? Genesis means the birth, which is the same thing as Bereshit. Birth or the beginning. The gen is the Sherish gen in, let's say, Latin or Greek. In Latin, it means, it's actually Greek, but gen means like woman or giving birth. Like genealogy, genes.
Dude, you're pretty smart.
What?
You've got like all these random things popping on your
genital, whatever. There's different words that the Sherish gen means to give birth. Okay, so I forgot what I was talking about now. Oh, Ben Ayyoh, Ben Yoyada. Okay, different things about Ben Ayyoh, Ben Yoyada. So either when it says that he beat up a lion on a snowy day, so either it means that he's chopped up this ice in order to go to the mikvah, or it means that he learned Taras Kayanim, which is either the book of Leviticus or a commentary on Leviticus on a winter day. There's a story about Ben Ayyoh, Ben Yoyada. There's a lot of stories about him, but there's one story in the Medrash Seicher Tayiv which says that one time the king of Paras, the Persian king, got sick. And he was told by his doctors that the only way for him to get healed was to drink the milk of a lioness. So the prince was like, well, how am I supposed to get the milk of a lioness exactly? So he sent a message to Shlomo Melech that, you know, I'm in this predicament, could you help me out? So it says in the Medrash that Shlomo Melech sent Ben Ayyoh, Ben Yoyada, and he went and he figured how he's going to get the milk of a lioness.
What you said before, and then it says about him that he killed the lion. Yeah.
That's similar things. So just to show his bravery in a way. So what did he do? He went and also his ability to strategize smartly in a way that he can get to his end. But what did he do? He went. He found this lioness that was nursing its cubs, and he brought with him a bunch of goats. And what he did was he one by one he threw the goats at the lioness. And the lioness got very excited because, you know, here's dinner and here's lunch and all these goats. And started playing with the goats and, you know, playing meaning like, you know, fighting with them and eating them and stuff like that. And while the lioness was busy dealing with the goats, so he went and he milked the lioness and he was able to get milk for this Persian king that Shlomo Melech had sent him to get milk for. It's an interesting story. Okay, so now Shlomo Melech has to take care of Yoav. Now we get to the story of Yoav, right? So Yoav heard about that Shlomo Melech is sort of doing an elimination of people who weren't friendly to his regime in a way. So Yoav was scared that because he had taken Adoniyahu's side, that Shlomo Melech would come for revenge. So Yoav also runs to the Mishkan. He runs to the Mishkan and he holds onto the horns of the Mizbeach as well. And he's holding on the horns of the Mizbeach, and he's, you know, saying sanctuary, claiming sanctuary, that he should be saved from whatever is coming to him. And Shlomo Melech sends Ben Ayyoh Ben Yoyada to go kill Yoav. And he goes to the Mishkan, and Yoav comes to the Mishkan and says, okay, Yoav, come out of the Mishkan. The king said you have to come out. And Yoav says, no, I want to die over here. So Ben Ayyoh goes back to Shlomo Melech and says, well, I told Yoav to come out of the Mishkan, and he said, no, he wants to die over there. So Shlomo Melech says, Asay kasher diber. Do like what he said. He said he wants to die there, so kill him over there. So Ben Ayyoh goes, and he kills Yoav while Yoav is over there in the Mishkan. So there's an interesting question over here. Like what happened? Like, is there really a halacha that if you go to the Mizbeach in the Mishkan, so then you're saved, you're safe, right? Even if you're deserving of death, you're supposed to be executed. You go over there to the Mishkan, to the Mizbeach, you get saved. So if there is such a halacha, so then he should be saved. If there isn't such a halacha, so then what was he doing exactly? What did he think would happen? Right? So how does that work? So one thing you can say, the pasuk says, "V'chiyazid ish al reyehi ulo'arga ba'arma mi'im is bechita kachan ulamus." If a person, this is a pasuk in Parshas Mishpatim, says if a person murdered somebody else on purpose, so even mi'im mizbechi, even if he's with the mizbeach, tikachan ulamus, you should take him out to kill him. So if you're a murderer and you murdered on purpose, the Mizbeach going into the Mishkan is not a sanctuary. It won't save you from getting what you deserve, and that's not a way to save yourself.
Why do you need a pasuk?
That's what the Ibn Ezra says. What?
Why do you need a pasuk to say that? Why would you think it does?
No, because it could. Let's say you killed somebody b'shoigig. Let's say you killed somebody inadvertently, right? So the halacha is you run to an ir mikla, to a city of refuge. But let's say instead of running to a city of refuge, you run to the Mishkan, and you go to the Mizbeach, or you go to the Mizbeach, the Mikdash, or the Mishkan, you go to the Mizbeach, so that could be that the halach is that saves you. Because the whole idea of an Ir Mikla, the city of refuge, is that the city of refuges are cities of Levim. And when you're in the Mizbeach, you're even more so in the realm of the Levium.
That doesn't work for Maisie.
So the Torah tells us this novel idea that it doesn't work if you did it b'mezid, if you did it on purpose. So Yoav, seemingly the different murders that Yoav had committed throughout the book of Samuel and Kings, it seems that Yoav was an intentional murderer, and therefore the Mizbeach, the altar, could not protect him, and therefore he got what he deserved over there in the altar, right there in the Mishkan. That's one approach. That's the Ibn Ezra's approach in Parashas Mishpatim. The Gemara in Makos, the Gemara says something else. The Gemara says that Yoav made two mistakes. So first of all, the halacha is, it's not the corner of the Mizbeach, not the corner of the altar which saves a person from death, but it's being on top of the altar. So he didn't go up on top of the altar, he was just holding on the side, and that wasn't good enough. That's one thing the Gemara says. The other thing the Gemara says is that this only works if it's really the central place of Jewish worship, of ritual worship. It has to be really in the Beis HaMikdash, in the temple, the holy temple, which is the permanent central place of worship. But if it's in the Mishkan, which is only a temporary place of worship, so that doesn't work. And we're talking about in the beginning of the reign of Shlomo Melech, the Beit HaMikdash had not yet been built, so this is a Mishkan. He went to the Mishkan, the altar in the Mishkan, that doesn't save him. So therefore, he got killed, even though he was claiming sanctuary over there. So that's the end of Yoav, and that's where we see that he gets his punishment. Just to do one more, we'll do one more story over here. It says that afterwards, the king Shlomo Melech went to Givon, where the Mishkan was, and he offered 1,000 korban olos in Givon. He offered 1,000 burnt offerings by the Mishkan in Givon. And the Ralbag, which the Ralbag is consistent with this throughout, the Ralbag is Gersonides, is consistent with this throughout his commentary on all of the Bible. He explains that sometimes when a person brings sacrifices, there's a certain type of sacrifices that a person brings that's a step towards receiving prophecy. So that's the type of sacrifice that Shlomo Melech, King Solomon, was bringing over here. He was bringing a sacrifice to bring him closer to prophecy. So he brought 1,000 burnt offerings as a sacrifice on the Mizbeach in Givon. And the Pasuk says that while he was at Givon, Hashem came to him in a dream. And this is a famous thing. Hashem said to him, you're doing good, like your father David HaMelech had been doing, Chesed Gadol, and you're going to continue in his path, so everything will be good. And I'm going to grant you a wish. Basically, if you want, you can ask me something, and I'll grant you a wish. And so Shlomo HaMelech asks from Hashem that I want you to give me Lev Shemeya Lishpeda Sa'am, a heart that's able to understand and judge between the nation, Lahavin Beitayv Lara, to be able to discern between good and bad. And in a nutshell, Shlomo HaMelech said that he wants understanding, he wants wisdom. And Hashem says to him, because you could have asked for anything you want, you could have asked for long life, you could have asked for riches, all these things, but you didn't. You asked specifically for wisdom, which shows that you appreciate the proper understanding of the Torah and the proper understanding of what Hashem wants. So I'm going to give you all of these things as well. You're going to have a long life, which it doesn't literally mean long life, because Shlomo Melech really didn't live such a long life. As I'll explain in a moment, but it means that his kingship, his dynasty is going to last for a long time, and he's going to have all these riches. And on top of that, he had great wisdom. And it says that he woke up and he realized that it was a dream. And Chazal tell us that he woke up and he was walking around, he heard the birds talking, and he was able to understand what the birds were saying. So he realized that the dream had come to fruition, that Hashem had really granted him a sort of supernatural or superhuman ability to understand things, a superhuman wisdom, and Hashem had given him this gift. So it says that he gave other types of sacrifices, shlomim, peace sacrifices. His name is Shlomo, he offers Shlomim, peace sacrifices, and he made a Vayas Mishal Chalavadav, he made a party for all of his servants, which is a very interesting thing that Chazal tell us, that this is the source for the fact, the idea that you should be, what the Gemara says, you should make a pseudo legomer shel mitzvah, legomer shel Torah. When a person finishes learning a substantial portion of Torah, so you're supposed to make a meal, what we call colloquially a siyum. So Shlomo HaMelech made the first siyum. He got this special standing from Hashem, so he made a siyum over here, and he made this big party, and that's what the idea of a siyum is.
That was a siyum or the beginning?
What?
Where's the beginning?
Now he has this special ability to understand and opened up new intellectual channels for him in understanding. I just wanted to say, does anybody know how old Shlomo HaMelech was when he became king? So Shlomo HaMelech was 12 years old when he became king, and he reigned for 40 years, so he ended up dying at 52 years old, which is not such a long life, especially because his father lived 70 years. So that's why I interpreted long life as a long-lasting dynasty. Okay, tomorrow, hopefully, we're going to continue speaking more about Shlomo HaMelech, and we'll see where we go from after that. Thank you for coming, and thank you for staying.
Yeah. I just want to tell you,